Why would you smuggle oatmeal? That's the bigger question they should be asking themselves, really.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. I've brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted.
Thank you for joining us here on the Autoimmune Hour with Sharon Saylor. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune and Life Interrupted Radio. Join the Autoimmune Hour's Courage Club. Sign up now at understandingautoimmune.com. Now, back to your host, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com, and as always, it's my honor and pleasure to be with you here on another brand new episode. Be sure and pop over to understandingautoimmune.com to find about 425 plus episodes as of now and counting. And tonight we have another great episode. Tonight we're going to do something a little bit different. I've invited my dear friend Liberty Forrest, and kind of interviewing me a little bit and chit-chatting. It's not really structured about a very specific type of thing, other than I recently got back from a trip. It was the first big, long trip since the pandemic. I was in several different locations, including going outside of the United States, which was fascinating. I was talking to Liberty about some of the things I wish I had done, and I think I'll do different next time. And she also has traveled recently. She actually had to travel and move during the pandemic across the pond, as we say. So she's going to share some of her insights about traveling. And I'm going to use this term traveling while disabled. I kind of bristle at that idea, but I think it's the best descriptor I have right now. So I'm going to use that. But let me introduce Liberty. Her name is Liberty Forrest. She's an award-winning author, speaker, and contributor to numerous publications, including Huffington Post, and she is a senior contributor to Sports Ed TV, and she's a lover of really dopey jokes, as well as the creator of the wonderful cartoon Witchy. And I always love Witchy's take on life. It always makes me smile when I see Witchy cartoons. So welcome, Liberty. Thanks for being on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for the invitation. It's always a pleasure to chat with you, whether it's for fun or for your show. And Witchy always appreciates it, too.
Thank you. And say hi to Witchy so she knows that I'm thinking of her. Now, I wanted to talk about travel, and I didn't really have any experts in mind. It wasn't really about being experts. I just wanted to share some insights, some learnings that I had. And you and I were chatting just as friends not too long ago, and I said, let's talk about this, because I know you recently actually moved. Mine was just a trip, so it's like a couple of suitcases. You actually had to do a big thing where it's like everything is going with you. One of the things I wanted to share is like just some top tips about travel right now. And does anything come to your mind right away when I say, what would be the number one top travel tip when you're, I hate the term disabled, but everybody knows what I'm talking about.
So I had one of those collapsible canes. They're so great. They just sort of fold up and you can stuff them in a bag, and it's fabulous. So, but I had been hoofing it all through this airport, and I had booked one of the seats with the exit door, and they ask when you book it, you know, are you physically able to remove the door and do what you need to do in such a, you know, an emergency? And I said, sure. But it wasn't an issue. My arms are good. My legs are good. I could have stood up, opened the door, and, you know, helped people out. But when they saw me get on the airplane with that, and they saw what seat I was at with the cane, that is, and then they saw what seat I had, oh, no, we can't put you there. Not allowed to put you there. No. And I said, but Really? I can, look, I'll show you, I can walk with, it's not, it's just for the long distances. Really, I'm okay. And they weren't having it. You and I mentioned, we talked about this recently, and you know, you did make a good point that, yeah, they have to kind of play devil's advocate, I guess. And some people would say that when it wasn't the truth, just because they wanted the leg room. But in my case, it really was the truth. But, you know, I guess, yeah. But I guess what I'm saying is, if you don't absolutely need the cane, and you know you could be okay in that situation, put your darn cane in your carry-on bag.
Although I have a little tale about my cane too. Those collapsible kinds technically are called walking sticks. And then, you know, it's this definition of what is a medically needed device. And then you can get into the semantics of what, how needed is it? And mine too, when I get tired, I do find that I just like the safety and security of my walking stick. I can walk through an airport without it, but it's just easier sometimes if I'm exhausted after a 12-hour flight to have it there. Makes me feel safe, and that's always important. Recently, I had mine, and it was in my carry-on, so I wasn't using it at the time. It was the beginning of the flight, and it was actually taken away from me because it was not a medically supervised device like a cane. They called it a walking stick. And I suppose technically it is, but I use it because my other devices don't compact. And I love this particular walking stick because, like you said, you can fit it in your carry-on if you're not needing it. And it's just easy to carry with because the big canes don't work in the overhead compartment the whole way. And so I wasn't going to give my walking stick up. So you're at an impasse, right? Went back to the airlines and they agreed to check it. But unfortunately, when it's checked alone, anyway, long story short, it ended up getting destroyed during the checking process, which it's like, well, what are you going to do? I talked to a TSA security agent from a different location afterwards about it. Like, okay, what would you do? And I was a little frustrated. I understand that thinking, but I sort of sarcastically said to them, so should I bring my disabled parking permit and a letter from my doctor? And in all honesty, he was being very honest. He said it wouldn't hurt. Wow. And I thought, oh my gosh, how much documentation do we need to carry? But the more I thought about it, I think it's a good idea to have plenty of documentation. So
I never would have thought you'd need that for a cane. And what the heck is the difference between a cane and a walking stick anyway?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you're using it to help you walk. So hello, people don't usually do that unless they need it.
I'm a little unclear on the difference myself. And since I had gotten to that distant location through 4 different TSAs, I'm a little surprised that it happened on the 5th. On the 5th leg of my travels. At that point, it is what it is, and you just have to deal with it. You have to roll with it. And so, I wasn't happy about it. And then I certainly wasn't happy that it, by the time I got it back from the baggage claim and everything, it had been destroyed.
Yeah, it looked like it was in pretty rough shape.
I showed it to Liberty before we started on the interview.
Lost its head.
It did get messed up. But anyway, the other thing I was thinking about documentation is the one of the descriptions of autoimmune is oftentimes it's an invisible illness. I hear this all the time, like, well, you look fine. Well, maybe right now in this moment, I am fine. But I never know when I'm going to get tired and my symptoms will increase or a flare will happen and it'll be very vivid in symptoms type of thing. And so one of the things I was thinking about when I sarcastically mentioned a letter from my doctor is probably a good idea to get a letter from my doctor describing the labels and some of the common things, because balance can become an issue for me when I get tired. And I don't want people to think maybe I've imbibed at the local airport bar too much, that this is really a medical issue that my balance is off.
Yeah, you don't want them not letting you on the plane because they think you're loaded.
Yeah, exactly. So definitely for me, I decide I'm going to get some sort of letter A that, you know, maybe I don't need the walking stick the whole time, but I use it. It is a medical device. And some of the more common symptoms that might be confused for something else, because it would have been, okay, giving up my walking stick was one thing, but, you know, being left in the terminal because they're thinking one thing and it's really not, it's a flare or what have you. That wouldn't be cool either. So I guess I'm just going to have to do it, even though I feel like it, you know, I don't need to be nannied, but I guess I'm just going to, I'm thinking that's what I'm going to be doing.
Well, I guess better to be safe than sorry. Although that doesn't always work. I have a different documentation issue that happened when I was moving back to Canada from England last year. And it was a couple of things. First of all, I discovered to my horror that they no longer allow Canadians into Canada without a Canadian passport. And I've been traveling on my British passport for probably 20 years and never had a problem. I was back and forth. I think this was my 42nd trip across the pond coming back. So I've been back and forth a lot on my British passport, never had an issue. Well, now I wasn't going to be allowed back in without a Canadian one. And I didn't, because I was moving back to stay with a friend who was terminally ill, to stay with him for the end of his life. I didn't really have time to waste. So I couldn't take the, it didn't have the documents with me. It would have been a nightmare to try to find the paperwork. And anyway, long story short, couldn't get the passport, but I did find out I could get something called special authorization within 10 days of travel. So I applied for that, got that. And then part two of the documentation issue was moving my stuff. I didn't have a lot to move. I left most of it and just brought back, sent with shipping back personal belongings. And I knew from a previous move back here, you needed paperwork. So I asked the removal company for the paperwork. Oh, no, you don't need any. And I said, yeah, I think you do. No, we've been doing this for decades. We don't, no, there's no paperwork. Okay. And the long story short is, no idea what this special authorization was. When I said, I'm showing up with a British passport, but here's my special authorization that says I'm a Canadian citizen. Like, he's like, what is that? And he was reading it. He had never seen it before. Anyway, it was all a big mess and it caused problems later when my shipment did finally arrive here where I am in Western Canada. So, you know, I did my best to sort out the documentation, but I would say certainly make sure about your passport requirements before you leave your country of like where you're currently living or where you're from or whatever. Check, you know, for the citizenship, see if there are any changes, because had I known in those 4 years, this last time I was living in England, I'm sure I would have sorted out my Canadian passport. That change actually happened just before I left here. I could have done that before I left Canada and went back to England. So I would say double, triple check passport requirements, because you don't want to be stuck not having the right documentation to be able to get one if you need it, or even if you lose your passport, how do you get a new one? You know, you go to an embassy, well, you still need some kind of documentation. So I'd say be prepared in case you ever have to replace or get a new passport in your the country of your birth, I would say. And then again, if you're moving, double, triple check on documentation for that too, whatever that means. I shouldn't have just taken the removal company's word for it. I should have checked with the government. And so, yeah, wherever there's documentation required, check a bunch of times, make sure you've got everything covered.
Yeah. And I think that's true for all of us, not just be if there's a disability or an illness involved in the situation as well. But one of you were talking about passports, and what came to my mind recently is I checked and mine should be renewed soon. And I was reading online how difficult it is right now here in the States. They have quite a big backlog. So that's another thing to be sure and check. It's, which isn't exactly related to that what happened regardless if I had a diagnosis or not, but it's true. So many
it's things. Another thing. And if you're sick, you don't need another thing to worry about, right?
Exactly. And I also, for me, I like making lists, and that way I can just check it off. And there's something gratifying about running a line through it, like done, done, done. And you can check beyond going on Dr. Google, which I'm always like, you know, there's good things and there's not so good things on there. So double check your sources too. Don't just believe some old travel blog about something. Check with the embassies where you are going. Check with the State Department, you know, and the State Departments of the places you're going. And just find out, because another topic I love this. We're just random all over here. Just as I mentioned in the opening for all my beautiful community here, it's just Liberty and I talking about our travels and things like that, and hoping that you guys can get out there and see the broader world too. And that now that the world's opened back up, that thrivers and being able to get out there. But one of the things that we're talking about, documentations and things, I'm going to do a kind of a left-hand pivot here. And this is not, when I say this word, this is just not the big C word, but is vaccinations. I have been on many, many continents, and everything from yellow fever to hepatitis, to, you know, tetanus, the whole shebang, making sure that you're up to date on those, because a lot of people could have possibly gotten behind on those or don't need, they need them now. But I think it's important that you're up to date on whichever ones you choose to do, or at least be aware that they're recommended, and you guys will know your medical histories best, whether that's important. But there, you can go to, here in the States, you can go to the State Department, and there's a listing of all the different countries and the needs that you might need. Some places you might need, you know, malaria, and other places malaria medication, and other places, you know, some other sorts of things. So be sure and check that out too, because where I'm going with that is you need to check with your doctor on, can I have these things with medications I'm taking? Now, I'm not a doctor, and I'm not going to get into a whole bunch of detail about any of that, or anything like that, but just make sure that you get all those details from qualified sources, and then talk to your doctor about, are there any contraindications with any of the medications or supplements I'm taking too. So I think there's so many layers of nuance to travel when you have an issue going on, a chronic long-term issue going on. But you're right, it can feel very tiring, and that's why I say make a list.
Yeah, and also check into potential healthcare options where you're going, especially if you only like alternatives like some of us. I would be looking for, where can I find an acupuncturist, or where can I find a homeopath, or where can I find, you know, other people, other alternative professions, you know, are there any where you're going? Because it depends on that too. But don't just kind of show up and expect that you're going to find the kind of healthcare you want, whether it's conventional or otherwise. The point is just, you know, it might be really great. It might not be really great, because I've heard horror stories too of people ending up ill or injured in a country where you would expect there's going to be at least some level of health care, and it was a nightmare. So I think it's important to check what's available, whether it's alternative or conventional or a bit of both, and be prepared before you go with that too.
Oh, absolutely. And you might, I've often seen the other parts of that too, where maybe the place has good health care, you just don't know how to access it, nor do you speak the language. And finding people, even a travel agency, something like that, if you want to go that route. But there are places, lots of groups. There are several websites. When I was doing a little bit of research on the topic before you and I started chatting, there's several websites I found that seem very reputable and reliable about really great blog posts on how to find medical care when you're not in your home base. I've had it when I've just been traveling to different states. I've thought, okay, I mean, I speak the language, it's different, just a different state. But, you know, I don't know which one of these different listings is the better one to go to, type of thing. So doing all that research before, it's absolutely urgent, and people are in an urgent or emergency situation having to make these very life-altering decisions. It never hurts to just to have that. And I don't know about you, I'm sometimes a believer in what we call Murphy's Law. I figure if I have that list.
Murphy and I, yeah, we're good buddies.
Yeah, me too. I think I know Murphy really well. So that's why I find that if I have a list of it and I've done the research beforehand, it's been very rare when I've had to use that list, but it's just nice. You know, one of the things, we had Sarah Payton on last week, and I love Sarah. And one of the things she always talks about is, like, the main thing that our body's asking is, am I safe? And there's something about this list, and I've done a little bit of research beforehand, that makes my body just go, I've got our list. You know, it may be that we need to use it, but, and that won't be fun or cool, but at least I have a plan of where to go and how to And especially if you're going to a location where you may be at best or just rudimentary in the language, that's really important. And having, I have not done this. I was reading one of these travel blogs, people with disabilities travels blogs, and I was impressed where they said, I'm not sure how we'd do it. Maybe you and I can come up with a solution or put in your comments, guys, about in the comment section about how you do it. They were talking about getting some translations of your diagnosis and the medications, because not all medications are called the same depending on the country. But certain brand names change, but the ingredients are the same type of thing. And I was like, okay, so then my mind went, where do I find a translator? But I thought it was a really good idea to get some of those details of your medical condition translated into the local language or more universal languages.
That's a great idea. I know I'm not one to take conventional medicine, but I have had occasion to certainly heard other people talking about that sort of thing. And even common things like antidepressants in England, I'd hear people talking about one in particular that was seemed quite popular. And I had no idea what it was, but it just goes by a different name on this side of the pond. Well, oh yeah, I know what that is. But all that time I was hearing about this other thing, what is that? So yeah, even in a country where you speak the same language, well, sort of, English is not like Canadian English or American English, but you know, generally speaking, yeah, it was, you know, even those are, can be different in an English speaking country. So that's a really good
idea. Yeah. And another thing popped into my mind is check to make sure that what you're taking is legal where you're going. Even some prescriptions aren't legal. So make sure that you've checked out these different things that you are wanting to take. And unfortunately, if something isn't legal, you know, talking to your doctor about what can we substitute for that time I'm gone or something like that, it would be really important. And nothing would be worse than at customs having a required or a medication your body's used to taking all the time, and then all of a sudden you're without it. So a lot of medications you have to wean off instead of just, you know, stop taking quickly isn't always healthy either. So that, boy, Liberty, we're just like getting deeper into the layers of, oh my goodness, this is really sounding like, do I want to stay home?
Well, I have another little story that's sort of drug related, but isn't, if I can share it, it's kind of worth a giggle.
Okay. And then we'll have to take a quick commercial break. But yeah, let's hear
you. Want to take your break first?
No, we'll go out with a giggle.
Okay, go out with a giggle. Well, as I was saying, I've traveled back and forth from Canada to England many times, and I never had an issue. And I kind of tend to dress like a hippie. I like long, flowy, ankle-length skirts and gowns and dresses and that sort of thing, and capes, shawls, and, you know, drapey things. Never had an issue. Until one summer, and everywhere I went, every time I went through security somewhere, I was getting pulled aside and they were treating me like I was, you know, they're checking through my stuff. And on the last flight, they asked me about this that I was wearing. I've been wearing this for several years. And they're like, what's in there? And they went to take it off me and they were trying to open it. And I'm like, don't open it. And then of course that made me look worse. And they said, well, what is it? What's in here? And I said, I don't actually know. And they said, what do you mean you don't know? And then that made me look worse again, right? I'm going to say now there's something in there. I don't know what it is. And I said, no, that was from my Qigong master. It helps protect you from electromagnetic frequencies. And there were waves. They were like, what? So they hauled it off and had to test it. And I'm thinking, you know, they were giving me the dirtiest looks. I was terrified. I knew there was nothing in there, but I was hoping they weren't going to open it. I didn't know if they were going to wreck it. But of course it came back fine because there's no cocaine or anything in this. I don't even know what's in there, if anything, but that's why I've been pulled over all those times. They thought I must have some drugs on me because of this. So if you have anything like this, or if it's sometimes the people wear a thing like that that's carrying a bit of a deceased relative or loved one, don't wear it. Pack it.
Yeah. Well, I see you wear it all the time. I didn't know what it was for, but yeah. So yeah. And oftentimes if you'll run into people who don't believe in those sorts of things, and you will get the side eye, and sometimes if they're in positions of authority, that would be awful too. Put it in the carry-on.
Running your grandma's ashes through the coke detector, right? So just don't wear stuff around your neck that looks like it contains something.
Okay. Well, good advice. Good advice. And with that, we'll take a quick commercial break. We'll see you in just a minute.
The Autoimmune Hour will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by understandingautoimmune.com to learn more.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Hi, it's Olivia Munn with my shelter pets, Frankie and Chance. Say hi, guys. When I adopted them, I discovered that they both have incredible personalities. Chance's sole purpose in life is to love and to be loved. Frankie is a little bit of a scoundrel and always entertaining. They're a little bit of a lot of things, but they're all pure love. Adopt pure love at theshelterpetproject.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the Humane Society of the United States, and Maddie's Fund.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour. Maybe you don't know I'm also an author. My latest book is for kids. It's Pinky Chenille and the Rainbow Hunters, a winner of a 5-star reader's favorite review. It's perfect for your early reader and a great bedtime story for your young adventurers. Check it out over at pinkychenille.com. That's PinkyChenille.com. See you there.
Research shows we apologize up to 10 times a day, and most of the time, we say sorry as a response to someone else's mistake. What if we thanked people instead of all that unnecessary apologizing? So instead of saying, sorry, I'm rambling, you say, thank you for listening. Join us at projectforgive.com, a free non-religious resource on global forgiveness.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. And be sure to stop by understandingautoimmune.com and check out all our previous episodes. And tonight, I'm here with my dear friend, Liberty Force, and we're just having a conversation back and forth about our joys and trials and tribulations of travel when you have medical conditions, and especially like invisible illnesses where they'll look at you and go, well, you look okay. And so we were talking about all sorts of things. And when we ended, we were talking about a piece of jewelry, or this is a medallion that Liberty was wearing and got called over for. And I just think it's so interesting to all the things that we take for granted in our lives that we never think, A, we just kind of forget that it's there, or B, like, it's innocuous. What is the problem? It's just something. It's just innocuous. And then yet so many times when I've been going through security, I am surprised at, you know, some comment about what's this or what's that. And one of the things that we haven't talked about that I know we both have great stories about is we both travel a lot with our own food. And what's it acceptable in certain countries to import, is that what they call that? Because certain places that you go have agricultural inspections. And so be very careful what foods you like to travel with and what foods. My foods do change. They become a little bit more processed. I, you know, my community knows I'm a farmer's market fanatic. And I do like to eat as natural and close to real food as possible. But I find when I travel, I do have certain more highly processed foods that come in a package and don't look suspicious, like, you know, that banana or apple or orange might. So what are some of your thoughts about traveling with food? How have you managed that?
First of all, definitely checking what's safe and or what's allowed. But then there's an interpretation of that. Like, I remember one time, I know from going back and forth to England, not allowed to take dairy products or meat products and plant products and that sort of thing. But thinking plant products, I wouldn't have thought of fruit, but yeah, it grows on a plant. So didn't think about it, you know. And one of those kind of funny stories. Every country has its favorite thing, right? In England, it's beans on toast. Well, on this side of the pond, it's mac and cheese, you know, the boxed kind. Most people love that stuff. I love that stuff. I don't eat it very often, but I confess every now and then I love the mac and cheese from the box, the white cheese especially. And so I had taken a bunch of these boxes with me on one of my trips back to England when I was living there. And I double checked the list. It shows certainly as you're getting on the plane, and then they give you a card when you're landing, and there's a big list at the where you collect your suitcases at Heathrow, and it says, you know, don't have these things. I'm looking at the list. Don't have that. Don't have that. Yeah, no dairy. Da, da, da. I've got this macaroni and cheese. And then I said, oh no, this is cheese. So I asked, I didn't want to get caught trying to hide it. And I said, oh, I just realized. he said, well, what is that? I said, well, it's pasta with a powdered cheese. And he went, powdered cheese?
Yeah, I was going to ask if that's dairy. I don't know.
I know, like, and I didn't think of it as that. I'm thinking of chunks of actual cheese or a bottle of milk. But yeah, I didn't think about a box of mac and cheese as dairy, probably with good reason. But he said I probably shouldn't, but I'll let you take it through. But yeah, kind of
keep in mind about that too, though, is how much you're quote unquote importing. I have an oatmeal that I love, and it's gluten-free, and I know I can eat it. I've never had an issue with it. And oftentimes finding food is tough. And so not my favorite, but if, you know, it's filling and a nice go-to in a pinch, I have a collapsible hot water kettle. I love it. It's made out of silicone. It's a little bit heavy, so I pack it instead of keep it in my carry-on. But so I can heat up my own water and make this gluten-free oatmeal that I like. And this last trip, because I was going to be gone so long, I had 12 little boxes of that. And in one of the locations, like, are you importing this? No, I'm going to consume it. You know? But it was a question of, why are you traveling with, you know, so much food and getting people who aren't familiar with food sensitivities to understand, like, why are you bringing a small grocery store in?
So. And why would you smuggle oatmeal? That's the bigger question they should be asking themselves, really.
Or mac and cheese with powdered white cheese that may or may not be cheese. That's true. I can always find fruit in locations, but one thing, I don't think they do it anymore. This was years ago. A particular airlines, I travel all the time still, and I haven't had it recently. And this time on this trip, they did not offer fresh fruit. It was all prepackaged types of things. And what was fascinating to me, this was years ago, they had come around with a basket and offer you, you know, some snacks and things. And I just mindlessly grabbed one because I thought, okay, I'm not hungry right now. I'm going to throw it in my carry-on. And by the time I get to the hotel, I'm going to be hungry. It's going to be late. I may not find a place open. So I'll just have that piece of fruit. Well, what I didn't realize was you can't import that piece of fruit to this particular location. Now, luckily, I, you know, said, well, but that's a so-and-so. They handed it to me on the airplane. I've heard horror stories of getting people that aren't too understanding, and you can get in all sorts of trouble for importing fruit, even if it was given to you by the plane, by the airline. Luckily, the person I had was rather understanding and confiscated my banana. but at least it blew over and it was not a big deal. But it did remind me of to be very mindful of, you know, what you throw in your carry-on just mindlessly once you're kind of out of, you know, into that secure area of the landing and loading and what you're picking up.
Yeah, I was surprised with my daughter trying to fly from England to here with a baby. She was about a year old, and she had taken some food on the plane to feed the baby, of course, during the 9-hour flight, and wouldn't let her on the plane with it. And then she said, what am I going to feed my baby? Because they didn't, yeah, maybe it was at the other end. Because I know there was some issue with, well, then what am I going to feed her? Because they weren't feeding her on the plane, even though, because she didn't pay for a ticket, right? She was holding the baby. Right. So now we're not going to feed the baby. And you couldn't, it was formula. I think it was formula in the bottle, or there was some issue with, you know, having too much liquid or something. Well, what am I going to feed my baby? And there were problems with that too. So I'd be double, triple checking what you can take on for a baby, and or in general, and then working within those rules with what can I feed my child? You know, if they're not old enough for actual food, then what do?
Yeah, or how you take it on, because I've had certain dehydrated type products that I take through security, but then I buy a couple of bottles of water once I'm through security and throw those on. So I always have access to water that I know. You know, I hear horror stories. I don't know if they're true or not, guys. I have no clue, but I hear horror stories. You're not supposed to drink the water on a plane. I don't know. The planes I go on, when they do the little cart, the water comes out of a national brand bottle that they open right there. So I'm like, okay. But I always get a bottle of water, at least one, once I'm through security and all of that, and throw that in my bag. That's always better safe than sorry to have a bottle of water. If nothing else, to be able to wash your hands or something like that.
Oh, absolutely. And that reminds me of a time when I was in Spain. I was getting sicker, and we decided to cut the trip short and get back to England ASAP. So it was a late night flight. Like, it was leaving at 2 a.m. or something, but the airport had a water problem. Everything, the water was all shut off. So the toilets were overflowing. You couldn't flush them. There was no water to wash your hands. There was nothing open to get a drink or get any food. Not that I was terribly hungry, but I certainly wanted a little bit of something, wanted something light. I would have thought there'd be a restaurant or something where you could get a bit of, you know, a cup of soup or something, but nope, everything was shut down and couldn't get a bottle of water or anything. And we just had to sit there in the airport for hours. Then the plane was delayed. And then it was a couple hours back to England. It was miserable. And what I would have given to have a couple of safe snacks and as you said, a couple of bottles of water. I normally put water, like you, go through security and then would get water on my long flights across the pond, but didn't think of it on a short flight, a couple hours from Spain to England. You know, we just wanted to get to the airport and get me home because I was really unwell. And then there was nothing at the airport, and it was just, it was a nightmare. Don't expect that either, but.
That's when Murphy happens, I'm telling you.
Exactly. It was like the one time I didn't have snacks and water. Literally, that's the only time I think I've ever traveled without any of that. But we just kind of left, we packed up and just headed to the airport because I was just really unwell.
And, well, talk about the one times. The one time I always, I mean, some people that travel with me, like, wow, you're prepared for everything. And except the one time you're not, then you need it. This is sounds so weird, but it was early in the flight, but we were high enough that the plane had been pressurized. So all of a sudden it starts, and I'm going to use air quotes, raining on me. And there was liquid falling from the overhead bin on me only, no one else. It's just like right over my head, whatever happened, it's literally pouring on me. And unfortunately it's a substance I'm allergic to. And I mean, I smelled it right away. I was like, oh no. I jump up and it's continuing to come out of the compartment. And people are kind of freaking out, like, you know, what is this and stuff? And the air attendant came and opened up the compartment. And sure enough, it was a bottle of this liquid that they had bought within the parameters of security. And I was shocked. Somehow the pressurization had popped the lid off. And, it, you know, of course, it flooded their suitcase, which, like, and then it flooded the compartment, and then it flooded me. Murphy jumped in because that was the one time I always travel with change of clothes. And just a simple change of clothes. It doesn't have to be fancy, but, you know, a pair of slacks and change of socks and the whole bit. And this particular time, I was taking some of my books, and I had run out of space. And so I thought, well, I have never used my little safety bag with a clean toothbrush and some soap and my change of clothes. One time I needed it. So some of my traveling companions, one of them did have a change of clothes, but they were actually what I would call sort of workout clothes, or, you know, maybe sleeping clothes, but the particular person who had that is much taller than I am. So they were the only dry clothes I could have access to. So of course I've got this huge pair of sweatpants on that practically comes up to my neck and an old ancient college sweatshirt on. And I mean, and I smell like this product, you do your best to wash it off in that little bathroom. But, you know, anybody's been on a plane knows that's not easy. And oh my gosh, that was just a nightmare. But I think the most hysterical part of this story is that I'm landing in another country, and so I have to go through their customs, et cetera. And instead of looking in my nice travel clothes, I'm showing up in sweatpants that are like five times too big for me and sweatshirt that's definitely way too big for me. You know, having to yank up the sleeves to see my hands and going through customs in a foreign country where I don't speak the language. Now,
you probably looked like you were packing all kinds of stuff in all those clothes, bags and bags of cocaine or something.
Who is this crazy lady in these oversized clothes? But it taught me I have not traveled without my little change of clothes in my carry-on, even just in case. And I've never had it rain on me since. So I think there's something to that. At least I'm
going to be. I've never traveled with a change of clothes. Because I wanted to leave enough room for my snacks. I wanted my crisps and my water or whatever else I had in there, my laptop and other things. Never carried a change of clothes, but I think I will from now on.
I know people look at my carry-on and they're like, wow, you're prepared for everything. And I said, well, that's the way the thought is that nothing will happen. That's the important part. And oh, I did, you know, one thing about carrying on a lot of stuff, I do want to comment that if you carry a medical device, like an oxygen or something like that, you carry some sort of medical device, or even let's say like some EpiPens and Benadryl or something like that, and you've got it in a little crossbody bag, or that doesn't count. If it's got your medicine in it, maybe you've got insulin or something like that, that doesn't count as that second personal item. Like sometimes I've had people argue with me when I've got my little cross bag on that has some medications that I want to keep on my body. I don't want to lose them. And then I've got my under the seat bag and I've got my carry on. They're like, you got three things. And then I show them that it's medication. And if you're carrying a medical device or medications in a separate bag, that doesn't count as a third item. And at least technically it doesn't. Who knows when you're in a position of being kind of like with the cane where they said, no, that's a walking stick, not a cane. But just so you know that for most of those medical devices, that doesn't count as a third item. You can technically carry that on board.
That's good to know. I'm really phobic about being sick. And I always travel with enough ginger root capsules at the ready, because about 6 hours into the flight, I'd need to take another dose to make sure I didn't get motion sickness. And there was always some question for a while there, especially after the Trade Center's misery, about what you could travel with and what you couldn't. And I got really clever one time and I thought, well, I used to keep them in a little tiny plastic zipped bag. But I thought, I don't know if I'm going to be allowed to take these with me, and I'm darn well not going to get motion sick. That'll finish me. I'll just be in pieces. So I tucked them in a little bit of plastic into my, shall we say, upper undergarment, and thought that'll be safe, because then it's nothing. I'm not trying to smuggle anything bad, but I don't want to take the whole bottle and have them chuck it. And I didn't want to even just have the three in the Ziploc bag or in the carry-on and wonder what that was and chuck it.
Now, Liberty, so, everybody else right now is going, we see this coming. So go ahead.
Yeah. So Murphy, of course, the one time I decided to just tuck it in my bra, it kind of had popped out and the woman was patting me down. She's like, oh, and then I kind of pulled my top down and you could see it hanging out, I guess, because of my movement. You know, I might have tucked it in better, but no, it was on its way out. It was going, hello, I'm in here. Oh, no. And she said, oh, what's this? And I said, it's just ginger root capsules for motion sickness. And it's good for morning sickness too, but that's another story. But, I was just trying to act, it's just easier. And got the three dose right there. Just grab it. And I don't have to dig around in my bag. And cause it wasn't anything illegal or illicit. It was just, yeah, there. Anyway, I was scrambling for a reasonable defense, which seemed to work. And she handed it to somebody to take away and test. And then I continued telling her, yeah, it's great. It's a great anti-inflammatory. It's good for anything that ends in itis, like sinusitis, arthritis, bursitis, well, all these other itises. she's, oh, I have a lot of problems with it. So got into this conversation with her where she thought it could do her some good. And I was telling her the dosage to take and all this. So it was like, at least she didn't sort of haul me off to the side, slam me against the wall and wait until they got the results, right? But they brought it back and said it was fine. It's like, oh, God, I didn't need that either.
Maybe. Hey, what if you, I know it's a big bottle, but taking the bottle with the three pills in it instead of, and leaving all the rest home in a baggie or something. I don't know. I mean, one of my recommendations is try and keep everything in the container that it came in, if at all.
I did that after that. I just took the bottle and I had an extra one in my, and I thought, well, if they chuck it, then I guess I'll just have to risk the motion sickness. But yeah, I never did that again, but it seemed like a good idea at the time. It was just rummaging through the bag. In part, it was that. It was, you're in a cramped seat and you're rummaging through a bag and you got all this other stuff in there. And I didn't want to crunch my crisps into pieces and, you know, all that. So that was partly that. And it was partly, I don't know if they're going to give me grief, you know, having these pills go through, but it was kind of a two-part thing. But yeah, I never did that again. I just left them in the ginger bottle and took the whole thing.
We're just down to the last couple of minutes. I did want to share one thing that I do have about rummaging in your bag. I got these two discs that are LED and you just press them, run by a battery, you just press them and you can turn on, it's like a closet light. People might recognize that idea. That's just a tiny little, it's probably 2 inches around. I keep those in both my big carry-on that I put overhead and I keep them in the under seat carry-on because it's kind of big and also a big cavernous hole when you're trying to lean down in your seat and pull that out. And I keep those little push-on lamps in my carry-on bags. And like I said, they're 2 inches. I got the really small kind. But boy, that light sure helps.
I had a very old car and the dash lights didn't work at night. So I stuck one of those on the steering column and would just turn it on at night so I could see how fast I was going, make sure I didn't get speeding tickets. One thing I've got, though, and I didn't think about it, is a tiny flashlight. It's about 2 or 3 inches long, that key ring, it attaches to your keychain. So you can, and then you just hit the bottom and it's a really bright light. So you could also do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
A little, but I've seen those. They're great little closet lights.
Anyway, Liberty, we're just down to the last couple of minutes. Tell everybody how to get a hold of you, that they want to read some of your novels or some of your great writings, and share your website about all the other wonderful work you do.
Oh, thank you so much for that, all those kind words. I appreciate that. Website's probably best. It's just libertyforest.com, and they can contact me there.
Her last name is spelled with two R's, F-O-R-R-E-S-T, libertyforest.com. You can find out more about her there and find some of her novels and her nonfiction writing as well. And she's got a great YouTube channel, so check that out too. As always, thank you for being here and spending this time together. And I hope you guys go out and have some adventures now that this crazy 3 years has passed and you can find some time, even if it's in your local community, go out and have some great adventures and share them in the comment section with us. Like, what are you doing now? How are you enjoying it? And everyone, have a great week. Like I said, whatever your adventures, join me next week for another brand new episode.
The information provided on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, including the websites understandingautoimmune.com and lifeinterruptedradio.com, plus social media, is for educational purposes only. What you read, hear, and see on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, and its websites, and other media outlets, is based on experience only. The information should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes. For the next few minutes, we'll be providing a guided meditation. Meditation is a positive way to help reset your day and does require specific, targeted attention and focus. Please do not drive or operate machinery during this time. As we say here, drive when you drive and meditate when you meditate.
Take a nice deep breath and extend your exhale. On the next deep breath, let it out with a sigh. That's right. As you continue to breathe deep and extend your exhale, breathing deep. And do you notice anything different? Ah. That's right. As you continue to breathe deep and extend your exhale, just notice all that changes, and yet it's still familiar, still comfortable. That's right. Continue to breathe deep. As you get comfortable with change. That's right. Breathe into it. Relax into it. Getting comfortable with change. Noticing it's as natural as your breath. That's right. Gathering up all that you've learned, all that you've thought about, with appreciation and gratitude. Bring it back to the present moment. With your next breath, alert, eyes wide open, alive and ready to begin your day again. That's right. Welcome back.